Hello, you're listening to Drawn to the Flame, a podcast for fans of Arkham Horror, the card game. We're sometimes fortnightly, we're sometimes monthly. I'm your host, Frank, and today I'm joined by...
It's me, Peter. Hello, Frank.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Doing really well. I took a sip of coffee there just after I said, it's me, Peter. So I was
perfect
hoping...
Perfect timing. Yeah.
How are you doing, Peter? Would take enough time for me to swallow it.
So how are you doing, Peter?
Yeah, doing really well. Obviously summer's hit, so It's raining constantly.
Perfect, yeah.
You know, sometimes you have those little jobs. I think you talked to me about this the other day. Was it like Weeding the driveway or something like that?
Yeah.
Those little jobs that you just weigh on you for a long period of time until they get done.
Yeah.
Finally had a gardener come and sort the garden out. And it was one of those things where I didn't realise how much I was worrying about the garden until someone sorted it out, and I then just kind of released a breath I didn't know I was holding.
You suddenly realise you can float. Yeah.
Exactly,
It's strange, isn't it? Because it's not a worry where you're, you know, staying up at night, can't sleep, fretting, but it's just, got to do this thing. Oh, yeah, got to do this. It's a strange kind of mental tax, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, how about yourself?
Yeah, all good, thank you. The local market has been cancelled today because of adverse weather, particularly high gusts.
Wow.
High gusts is the reason that there's no market today.
When you want by gusts.
Yeah. So we're in full summer as well, enjoying the high gusts and the blustery weather. It's great. So unfortunately, we don't need to spin the wheel for what we're about to do now, Peter. But maybe we should spin it anyway and see what class the wheel lands on.
There's no way it's going to land on the 1-1 we haven't done, right?
That would be funny if it did that.
1 in 5 chance. Should we give it a go?
Give it a go.
Look at that, it's landed on Mystic.
No way. Okay.
Incredible. What are the odds? I'd forgotten which class we hadn't done last night, and I had to message you sheepishly. Who haven't we
it
talked
was such
about
a it? Such a prime moment. I mean, similarly, when we did an investigator specific episode recently, I couldn't remember if we'd done Trish yet or not, and realised that if we're not careful, we'll end up doing all of the investigators again.
Oh, mate, we'll forget. Your nightmare.
Yeah, and then imagine if that's what happened with the Dunwich episode now, if we'd both forgotten.
These cards seem so familiar. It must be because...
I'm getting a strong sense of deja vu talking about these Guardian cards. Oh, it must just be because we've played with the cards for so long. It's definitely not that we've recorded an hour's episode on it. Anyway, I'm pretty confident we've not done the Mystic cards yet. So shall we dive in?
This is our
first look, bunny ears, at the Mystic cards now that we can return to them. And yeah, I guess more for us than for the listener, it's a chance for us to revisit this early part of the game and apply our knowledge and experience now as more seasoned players to what was going on then.
Yeah.
So we talk briefly about the investigator, don't we?
Yeah.
So our investigator in Dunwich, our Mystic investigator, was Jim Culver, the musician. 4-3-3-2 for stats. And just a little reminder here, obviously we're not doing a full detail. He allows you to treat the modifier on skull tokens as zeros. And anytime you reveal an Elder Sign token, you can choose to instead treat it as a skull. And the Elder Sign effect is +1. And he's got 7 health and 8 sanity. And like all of the Dunwich investigators, he's his main class 0-5 and then has that Dunwich splash of 5 level 0 cards.
He's interesting in context here. So... If we look at... Can I go meta straight away?
Yeah, do it.
There's a few themes we associate with Mystics, right? Mm-hmm. The main one being the kind of willpower replacement combined with a high willpower. So you're reliant on assets and events that allow you to use your willpower in place of whatever other stat you need to use in the situation. So that's a common theme. Then there's also the cards that have effects which place or manipulate Doom, particularly for an added benefit. It's like a trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
So it's extra good, but it adds some Doom somewhere. And then we also have the kind of bag manipulation style where we look at we draw additional tokens and then pick ones to resolve or cancel tokens or try and predict what tokens are going to be drawn.
Mm-hmm.
And what surprised me, revising the Dunwich cards, once I remember we were doing Mystics, was sort of all of those themes are explored in the very first expansion.
Mm-hmm.
Including the Investigator, who has essentially a kind of bag manipulation ability.
Mm-hmm.
Or certainly one that synergizes with bag manipulation. It was the first non-core Mystic Investigator released.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say maybe one of the characters who's had the most change in fortunes since the game first came out.
Yeah, I feel like he was competing against Agnes and it was very hard to justify treat the modifier and skulls as zeros in the face of five willpower, direct damage if you're able to horrify yourself. What seemed like a much more, I don't know, I don't want to say straightforward, but much more obviously powerful design.
Mm.
Maybe straightforwardly powerful. And there have been people who have sort of adored Jim for that as well, haven't they? That hope that he's going to be potent, despite him not necessarily looking powerful. I think you've even said on the cast before, you know, once you get to that point where you've got a suite of cards with Jim where he's smoothing out the bag, it's one of these things that's very hard to evaluate, but it just doesn't fail tests because you just make everything sort of trivial.
Yes, yes.
Maybe we need to do more work on hard expert in terms of seeing if he's really having an impact in that way. Although I think most players who play on hard would look at his stat line and not be pleased.
I still remember when we ran Endless Debts of Yoth to the expo a few years ago and someone had a gym deck and you were like, oh, that's great. Like, the skull token is one of the ones that they basically just become auto-fail tokens after a few levels. You've picked Jim, who can survive, and then he's also got horror healing. And the guy was just like, oh, no, I just like Jim.
Yeah. I was like, oh, damn. Yeah. I have early memories of an early playthrough of Dunwich as well. Jim and Ashkan Pete. A friend of mine playing Jim, me playing Ashkan Pete. Do you remember those, like, early games, sort of in the early life of the game, where you think that you're building clever decks, and then my memory looking back is how hapless they were. We were just sort of bumbling our way through using what we had. But yeah, I suppose to answer your point more generally about the different themes within this class, I also feel like one of the fascinating things about revisiting Dunwich, and I feel like we got this with the Rogue class as well, is that rather than picking one aspect of the class to develop, one of the things that Dunwich does is it fleshes out all of the areas, just not to a great depth. So we see, you know, for instance, rogue weapons. We talked about this a bit when we did Rogue. There are rogue weapons, but they haven't really come into their own at this point in the game.
Yeah.
Because there isn't someone like, say, a Tony Morgan or enough support around them. And I think similar, well, we might see similar in Mystic. We've already seen willpower replacement in the core set. We've already seen some Doom. Have we seen any token manipulation? Yeah, we have in Grotesque Statue. Draw two tokens and choose one rather than another. So, like, it's all there, exactly as you say, but it gets fleshed out in a slightly different way. Right. So I guess we keep an eye out for token manipulation cards to play off Jim. And should we dive in and look at some of these Dunwich Mystic cards?
Yeah, let's do it. Is it me to read the first one, then?
Do you want to go first? You get. I think we always let you have the order as the...
Yeah, but you did Jim, so...
Talent, yeah.
Surely.
You need to make sure you're kept happy.
Okay, first of all, we have... Oh, that's a real shame, because I read out the second card. Never mind.
I know, that's why I'm asking you about the order.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Right, we've got a four-cost asset, Rite of Seeking. It has a single intellect icon and the spell trait. Uses three charges. Action, spend one charge. Investigate. Investigate using willpower instead of intellect. If you succeed, discover one additional clue at this location. If a skull, cultist, tablet, elder thing, or autofail symbol is revealed during this test, after this test resolves, lose all remaining actions and immediately end your turn. And of course it uses the arcane slot.
High Rite of Seeking.
Yeah,
welcome classic. To the party.
It's kind of wild it wasn't in the core set.
And in the revised core set, they actually add Rite of Seeking level 2.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
But not Rite of Seeking level 1?
No. So you can upgrade into Rite of Seeking 2 to sort of power up your spell suite, which is curious, isn't it? I suppose they don't want to do Rite of Seeking Zero because
what
they're hoping that you buy
Rite of
Dunwich next.
Two in?
Well, fascinatingly, it is in Return to Dunwich.
Ah, okay.
So there's this really core set, no Rite of Seeking.
Yeah.
Revised core, Rite of Seeking 2. Dunwich, Rite of Seeking 0. Return to Dunwich, Rite of Seeking 2. Which unfortunately makes me think that the Return 2s aren't going to return anytime soon. So I just use the word return. Because if they've pilfered some cards from, or at least a card from them, into the revised core, maybe they think that it's going to be less of an appeal to buy that box. Which is a shame.
Oh, who knows?
Who knows, yeah.
What do you think about
is
this card?
Is it good, though, Peter?
Yeah. Is it good? Yeah, it is, right?
Yeah, it is
I
very
think
good.
It was probably still a bit of a staple. If you're doing the classic Mystic style, two fight spells, two investigate spells.
Yeah.
Which we all did for like 5 years.
Yeah, it only was with Jacqueline Fine's deck where that introduced Clairvoyance, which is more or less the same numbers, but gives you horror instead for special tokens, that I felt like Rite of Seeking got a like-for-like challenge. Because obviously Sixth Sense came out in The Circle Undone, which is a great rival for Rite of Seeking, and I would say a lot better solo than Rite of Seeking is. But up until that point, Mystics went with Rite of Seeking, basically. And you had this thing in Mystic as well. You have this thing where they might just be multi-clue.
Yeah.
So you'd have Rite of Seeking, you'd maybe have a card like Read the Signs, or if there are any other Mystic events that get you two clues at a time.
Yeah.
And you might not be the main clue getter, but you would just, every time you need to get clues, you'd get them in twos. And I think that's, particularly in two and four player, it's really good. Very efficient. Yeah. What about the turn ending ability? Have you ever had that punishment?
Yeah, all the time. It's quite common. And I think this will apply, because we've got upgraded shriveling to look at in this set as well, spoilers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that really, the trigger on any symbol revealed.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I was going to mention this actually. There's two types of card, Frank. And which are you, boy? There's cards that reference the Skull, the Cultist, the Tablet, the Elder Thing, and the Autofail symbol. And there's cards that used to say that, but now have been tabooed to say any symbol or a symbol.
Yeah, good point.
And without looking at your deck building card site of choice, it's hard to remember which ones are which.
Yeah. If you forced me to decide right now, my gut instinct would be the quote-unquote good symbol cards are the ones that have been tabooed to be more good, more gooder, better, have a wider application. And the quote-unquote bad symbol cards, like a Rite of Seeking or a Shriveling, where if you reveal the symbol, it punishes you, have stayed the same.
Yes, you are nearly right.
Okay.
There is a good card in this set, and it's one of the best cards in the set, that has not been updated to say that.
Right, okay. Curious. Is that Hypnotic Gaze?
No, it's Defiance.
Oh, Defiance, yeah, of course. Yeah, okay. So nearly all, but not all.
Yeah.
I mean, that in itself, I remember people being quite excited about that taboo. I've not actually seen that much conversation after the fact, but it feels like a real, one of my favourite phrases, quality of life improvement.
Yeah.
If you're wanting to do these token manipulating styles, why not just give a little shot in the arm to anything that helps you with that?
Yeah.
Okay, so you have had your turn be ended by Rite of Seeking.
Yes, several times. And the obvious play around is to use its ability at the end of your turn.
Mm-hmm.
You only get three charges, so unless you're on like a six clue location trying to steam in and get all the clues, then I don't think it's the end of the world. Are you the prime clue in the team? Maybe.
Mm-hmm. What I've also seen sort of later in the game is if you are the primary cluer, you might have more than one clue spell down, in which case you can, you know, first action use Clairvoyance, second action move, third action Rite of Seeking,
or,
you know, Sixth Sense twice and then Rite of Seeking, depending on the number of clues in your location. It does lead to these slightly awkward play patterns where maybe you're forced to gamble at a certain point. Look, we really need to clear this location and move on. Okay, I'll first action, I'll play a card, second action or rite of seeking, and I'll hope I have an action left to do this.
Yeah.
You try to mitigate how punishing it can be, but yeah, broadly speaking, I'd say it's up there as one of the meanest effects, but it's also one of the ones that you can then play around in the way that you've used the example of Shriveling. Shriveling is going to be a horror, and it doesn't matter if it's your first action or your last, and indeed it could hit you multiple times in a turn. Right, shall I move us on?
Yeah, let's do it.
Next, we have Ritual Candles. This is a one-cost asset with a willpower icon. It's item-traded, and it has a reaction. After a skull, cultist, tablet, or Elder Thing symbol is revealed during a test you're performing, you get +1 skill value for this test. The wax tapers give off an eerie glow, and the flames move as if they are alive. And it takes up the hand slot.
Yeah, well,
Ritual Candle Stan coming in.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one. It's so specific to the type of build you're making. And I've had this card go from, like, it's absolutely useless and it never does anything, never helps you, to being like, I can't believe this is not limited. It doesn't exhaust after it's been used. It's not even limited to once per test.
Yeah.
Which it probably should be.
Yeah, so if you have any of those symbol effects where it's, you know, cultist is -1, reveal another token. With this, it becomes 0, reveal another token, and potentially get another +1 if you get another symbol.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And obviously with curse, because the taboo lets it work with any symbols, you have 2 ritual candles and you've negated the impact of curse tokens.
Mm. Yeah, curse as 0 reveal again is pretty trivial.
Mm. Yeah. Like, even if you were doing some kind of rogue curse deck, bring in 2 of these, if you're doing, like, some succeed by X thing, you could turn your blessed tokens into +4s.
Yeah. And in Jim, because he treats skulls as 0s anyway, if he has this down, he essentially fills the bag with a couple of +1s, extra +1s, which, again, you're probably not banking on to pass your tests, and this is where the token fishing style falls down if you're so under the threshold that you're desperate for that skull to pass. But it just adds up to this idea that his stat line is maybe like 0.5 higher
than
it seems like it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Passes more tests than he should. The other thing going for Ritual Candles is at this point in the game, there aren't too many things in hand slots for Mystics. There are some notable things like Grotesque Statue or Sword Cane, but potentially as a Mystic, you're using your arcane slots for your kind of the business end of what you're doing, your spells. So Ritual Candles isn't competing for a slot in the same way that it might be in another class.
Absolutely, yeah. And actually, that's always been the difficulty of this card, really, is the hand slot. That's what really limits its power, I think.
Yes, yeah. If you just surrounded yourself by Ritual Candles not taking a slot, then it would be,
yeah. But you think about, like, just one of these turns those -3 special symbols in the bag into -2s instead, which is so much more manageable. And, like, if you've got 2 of them down, then those cards are all probably no special symbols in the bag going to be worse than sort of -2. There are some campaigns where say, skulls or cultists can get much worse. We've just finished
or
playing
late,
one.
late campaign where a tablet or an elder thing might just be a really horrible number or, you know, offer you a different effect instead.
Yeah. And, of course, they tend to be the effects if you're playing on easy and standard where there's an additional effect for failing. So having this...
Yeah, making them better is... Yeah.
Yeah, it avoids that. It boosts up your skill value. I just think it's an all-round good card. And I think if you've not experienced it working, you should try making a deck where it sings and then you'll change your mind.
I think the other thing that really opened my eyes to it was a way of thinking about the bag maths. And explained this to me from, I think, Start With The Name and that explanation. So when you think of committing cards, if you think of committing cards in terms of the number of tokens you take out of the bag, rather than just the score you get to, this is a potentially removing multiple tokens from the bag. But what it's not doing is doing that numerically, as in it's not doing it just from boosting your stat.
Yeah.
So say I'm a 2 up, I could put in, I don't know, an Unexpected Courage. Now I'm 4 up, and that might only remove a -3 and a -4 from the bag. But ritual candles might actually be giving me more of a boost to more tokens.
Yeah.
But not get my status high.
Yeah.
And that, I think, I mean, it's par for the course for any bag token manipulating mystic to be keeping an eye on how many special symbols are there in the bag, what's mm-hmm. the likelihood of drawing them, and obviously ritual candles. You want to do that because you want to know how many extra bonuses are sitting in the bag for you. Any more you want to say about ritual candles?
No, I'm happy to press on.
Next is you.
Bro, okay, we've got a 2-cost asset, Clarity of Mind. This has a single willpower icon, and it is a spell. It uses 3 charges. Action, spend 1 charge. Heal 1 horror from an investigator at your location. And it uses the arcane slot. From the unreal, lead me to the real. From the darkness, lead me to the light. From the dead, lead me to the immortal.
Mm. Now, we've got a fork in the road here, Peter.
Yeah.
We could talk probably for about 10 or 15 minutes about healing versus soak, about the action tax of healing.
Mm.
I feel like we've talked about that before on the cast, though. Or the other path is the...
Say it's bad and move on.
Yeah, yeah. Which is rare. It's rare for us to just say a card is bad and move on. But there we go. Yeah. We've both come to the rescue.
It compares to, what's it called? First aid, is it? In the core mm-hmm. set?
Yeah.
Which, is that not damage or horror?
Yeah.
And it's no slot.
Yeah.
And that's also a bad card. Yeah. This isn't even as good as that. It's just so, for the amount of horror it heals, 3 horror, you're paying mm-hmm. 2 resources and then 4 actions, 1 to put out to play and then 3 to heal 3 horror. From an investigator your location. So clunky.
And it's in a class where this is your most competitive slot. So, yeah.
Yeah. Should we move on then?
Yeah. the only thing I'd add is, I've said this a few times, event scenarios go long.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's worth having healing for those scenarios. And it might be that you run a one-off of this, a one-off of healing words, if you're... You know, particularly if you're, say, like an arcane slot juggling character like Dexter, maybe like a Catchy. And, you know, Torrent of Power is a thing, but there are so many better ways now of getting lots of charges if you want to do Torrent of Power. It's a fallacy, isn't it, to say, well, you could run this to power up another card. It's like, well, you could also run Shriveling or Rite of Seeking to power up the same card if you want, and those cards have another use.
Maybe you take it out of faction instead of taking, like, Liquid Courage or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which would be a wild pick, but yeah, I don't know.
Next, we have our XP card from the original Dunwich Legacy expansion box, which is the 3-cost 2XP Bind Monster. This has willpower and intellect icons. It's spell treated. It says, evade. This evasion attempt uses willpower instead of agility. If you succeed and the enemy is non-elite, evade it and attach Bind Monster to it. Reaction. When attached enemy would ready, test willpower 3. If you succeed, attached enemy does not ready. If you fail, discard bind monster. It's interesting the wording with no definite article, no when the attached enemy, the attached... It's just, again, we saw this with some other cards looking back at Dunwich, and the templating has gently changed. I've seen this in action back in the day. I've seen it in gym, in fact.
It compares to, at that point, you're looking at
Blinding Light,
which had a level 0 and a level 2 version, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I think I probably would have preferred over this. 3-cost is a little bit steep, I feel.
Yes, yeah.
It's always the bind, no pun intended, that the enemies that are hardest to deal with and you might want this effect to be used on or would be most useful on are elite enemies.
Mm-hmm.
So getting stuck like, oh, there's a huge enemy coming towards us. Let's see if we can bind it to keep it evaded while we wail on it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, we can't because it's elite. At least you can still evade the enemy using this.
You can. That's an expensive evade. 3-cost 2XP to allow you to use willpower to evade. That therein is the problem in the card, which is for it to be worthwhile, you actually want to probably keep an enemy locked down for a couple of turns. And if you're keeping an enemy locked down for a couple of turns, why are you not just trying to kill it? Even if you're just trying to kill it slowly.
Mm.
So the problem that this card solves, you can solve more efficiently elsewhere.
Yeah.
Three cost to play this, to essentially say I'm going to take extra tests to get any value out of this, is it's really, really hard sell. Because all it takes is for you to fail that willpower test at the end of the first round.
Yeah.
And suddenly you've just, yeah, you've used a card, like I say, three cost, two XP card, just to use your willpower to evade.
Yeah.
I think as well, if you saw on an encounter card any sort of like multiple test actions, I am very wary of them. You know, if it's something like, say, test willpower one, then test agility two, then test intellect three, whatever it is. There's a couple in Dream Eaters. Those are pretty scary actions to take, because all it takes is one failure and then you've wasted the entire action and you're taking multiple tests in one go. And I think there's a reason we don't see that on player count cards very much, multiple tests for one action, because it's very resource intensive in terms of commits, in terms of the risk of the token bag. All it takes is one auto fail and it's sort of mitigated all of the cool effect you're going for. Other thing we've seen now is that this effect has been revisited in a way with cards like Power Word.
Yes.
And what we see in Power Word is no extra tests. In fact, no tests at all. So, unfortunately, I think that consigns Bind Monster to the binder probably for a bit longer.
Binder monster, more like.
Boom. Yeah, it lurks in the binder, hoping you'll take it. What have we got next?
We've got an exciting one next. We have a one-cost event, Delve Too Deep. This has the insight trait and says, in player order, each investigator draws one card from the top of the encounter deck. Then add Delve Too Deep to the victory display. Victory 1. Some things, once seen, can't be unseen. I didn't forget to read out the icons. It doesn't have any icons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love from the top of the encounter deck for that drawing, rather than just draws one card from the encounter deck.
Yes.
Weird wording, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Just pick where you're going to draw it from.
Yeah. I'll take the sixth card down, please. Yeah, I have a good feeling about it. Okay, yeah. Delve Too Deep, pretty powerful card.
Yes.
So good we've done a little episode about it. Super exciting at the time it came out, because it adds to the sort of role-playing game side of the game where you might be going hunting for more VP. It's a card that doesn't help you at all in the scenario, but you might be willing to sacrifice slots in your deck, sacrifice the risk of drawing from the encounter deck for a boost in later scenarios, the VP. So yeah, it's a really intriguing design space, and it was really cool to see it right at the start of the game.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like we used this a hell of a lot early on.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like two first auto picks in Mystic.
Mm-hmm.
But just experiment a bit more with the card pool these days.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's still as strong as it always was.
Mm-hmm.
Getting experience is very good. And I think you've got more ways of managing the risk now as well.
Mm.
It was always like the last turn before everyone resigned. It's like everyone resigns except the Mystic, who delve too deep.
Yeah.
It's also, it was such a strong effect. They actually tabooed this. Is it a taboo? It is a taboo, isn't it?
It's limits two in the victory display. Limit two copies of Delve Too Deep in the victory display.
Yeah.
In part, I believe, because in an early Arkham Knights, there were so many people delving, including the Mythos Busters, curse the name forever, that, you know, if you're meant to be getting 4 or 5 XP from a scenario and you're suddenly getting, I don't know, 10 or 11, it really warps the campaign expectations around
XP. It really does.
I'd say that's the other way that it's fallen out of favour, is that later campaigns have been a little bit more generous with XP, which I like. It means it becomes less of a must run. And we've also then had other ways of getting XP, whether that's Charon's Obol, whether that's In the Thick of It, whether that's Arcane Research. Like, lots of different ways that you could be getting XP that doesn't require you to give up deck slots.
Yeah.
Yeah. My take on it, I saw it a lot. I'd actually say my experience at this point in the game as a predominantly solo player, I feel like I didn't see Rite of Seeking as much as I saw Rite of Seeking talked about. And I'd say the same for Delve Too Deep. The risk of Delve Too Deep in solo is it's not going to help you get out of a pickle if you're in one and there's no one else to help you. And it can also put you in a bit of a pickle. And so it's sort of you're trading in not just a slot in your deck, but also then a card in your hand and hoping to get to the finish line with enough time to spare that you can delve and then finish. And I did play it, but I did find that really tricky. And I even experimented with playing it when I felt like I was under control in scenarios. And often, obviously, it made things a lot worse. All it takes is for you to draw an enemy, not deal with it efficiently, and then draw another enemy, and suddenly your scenario is close to over. And yeah, that's kind of scary. Next, we have Song of the Dead. This is a 2-cost, 2xp asset with a willpower icon. It's spell and song traited. It uses 5 charges. Action, spend 1 charge, fight. This attack uses willpower instead of combat. You get +1 willpower for this attack. If a skull symbol is revealed during this attack deals +2 damage. Takes up the arcane slot.
It's a really interesting one, this. Everyone immediately thinks of Jim when they see this. He's like, ooh, Jim wants to draw skulls. This card also wants to draw skulls. But it doesn't give you a way of drawing skulls.
No, it doesn't.
It's a frustrating one because it's conditional extra damage, and we've talked about this a lot. It's a tough... When you need to rely on dealing damage to something, having something which you can't rely on makes it more difficult. I think probably there's a few more tools nowadays to make this work. I don't know whether it's enough to make this worth taking, but if you could reliably draw the skulls, you're talking about a lot of charges for a lot of and a lot of damage on a card. That's quite cheap in terms of XP.
Yeah, 2 cost for 15 damage is way high. But it's, can you manage that? Can you get that 15? And it's giving you a +1 boost as well for that. So there's a lot that's nice there. Yeah, you've got, like, for instance, Grotesque Statue, to go fishing. The other person I think this would be worth considering in is Jacqueline, because you can do that, reveal 3 tokens and get rid of 2. You can go fishing in Jacqueline in a way that you can't really in any other investigator for the right tokens. And that could be really cool to see that in play for her. I agree with you. It looks like it's a Jim card, but it has the same requirement Jim does, which is draw skulls, which is, it's funny. And this also, worth noting, this was our second combat spell after Shriveling. So there was a period of time in the game where if you wanted to fight as a mystic, you had Shriveling and then this. Yeah. It was admittedly a very short period of time. But that was the limit. And I feel like, unfortunately, I didn't see people run it even when that was the case. And that in itself suggests that it was hard to justify.
No, I remember running it a few times. And what you would do is, if you went all in on fighting, you would have, fighting as a mystic, you'd have Song of the Dead and then Shriveling. And then if you had a 3 health enemy, 3 plus health enemy, you'd attack it with Song of the Dead first. And then use your Shriveling charge second.
Yeah.
With the chance that you might kill the enemy with the Song of the Dead charge.
Yeah. You could, first action, pull a skull, 3 damage, it's dead. Yeah. If it's a 5 healther, say, then you've done 3, and then you do 2 with Shriveling, and you're done.
Because when you're, if you're like a main fighter, those charges on Shriveling disappear quite quickly.
And using a Shriveling charge for that final point of damage on an odd health enemy can feel really awkward. I think it's why like Fire Axe became so useful in Agnes.
Yeah.
That you could get these points of damage, and of course she has her ability to do that as well. And you can really preserve those charges.
Yeah, like Shriveling, like if you have 2-3 health enemies, that's your Shriveling used up. If you don't have it, exactly. If you don't have a way to do that 1 damage.
Yeah, 3 health enemies, Shake's Fist, they just cause so many problems. Unlike, say, Clarity of Mind, where I'm not that bothered about the card, Song of the Dead is a card I would really like to like. I would like to see it in more places. I think it's a really cool design. I really like the ratio of cost to charges. And I guess it's just a shame that it doesn't see more play. Should we move on?
Yeah, let's do it. Is it my turn again?
It is, yeah.
Okay, we have a 3-cost event. This is Hypnotic Gaze. Has a combat icon and an agility icon, and it has the spell trait. I think we've only had 2 that are non-spells so far, right? So the candles and the...
Delve.
Right, it says, fast, play when an enemy attacks an investigator at your location. Cancel the attack. Then, reveal a random token from the chaos bag. If it has a skull, cultist, tablet, elder thing, or autofail symbol, deal the attacking enemy's damage to itself. Now, the question is, has this been tabooed?
No, I would guess... I would hope yes, but I think not.
It has not been tabooed.
It's a shame. It also has this interesting wording, if it has a symbol, not if it is a symbol.
Oh, yeah.
The go-to comparison here is with Dodge. Dodge is 1-cost cancel.
Yeah.
And Hypnotic Gaze is 3-cost cancel. They both can cancel attacks of opportunity. They both can cancel retaliates. They both can cancel attacks on other people, other investigators at your location. So they are comparable in many ways. And you don't have to do anything to get the cancel with Hypnotic Gaze. There's no test involved, which is good as well. What you're paying the 2 extra resources for is the chance for the enemy to hit itself, which is A, unreliable, and B, surprisingly hard to find an enemy that does enough damage for that to be really worthwhile.
Yeah.
Like, the ideal is it's a 3 health enemy that hits for 3 damage, but that is a very rare occurrence and quite a scary enemy. So the reality is you're probably paying 2 resources for an enemy to maybe do 1 damage to itself.
Yeah.
I have seen it used. I have seen it land. Again, Jacqueline is the go-to for token manipulation. It's just a really expensive thing to do.
That has been my experience as well. I'd have to agree with you. It's just 3 cost to avoid 1 attack. It's so expensive.
Yeah.
Just like better ways of doing the same thing. Like, it's one of the ones where the best case situation, it's sort of priced around the best case.
Yeah.
Even if that's not particularly likely.
I'd say 3 cost in Mystic. You know, we talk about sort of 1 is cheap, 2-3 is medium, 4-5 is expensive. In Mystic, there's so many things that cost 3 or above. I'd say I'd almost start thinking about 3 cost as expensive. And if you've got, say, a Rite of Seeking you want to play, a Shriveling you want to play, maybe you want to play multiple copies of them in a scenario because they have charges, I've tended towards wanting my event suite to be cheap in comparison, because otherwise I just have no resources to do things. So you either have to be a really rich Mystic to be able to afford Hypnotic Gaze, and even then, paying 3 for a cancel can be just really painful. You know, going in its favour, if you've got a situation like, I don't know, in Dunwich, where you've got Silas Bishop hitting for 2 and 2 in the Hidden Chamber,
yeah,
something like that, where you can stay in for a turn, cancel the hit, make progress, is great. Obviously, it also doesn't care about elite or non-elite, so end of campaigns, if there's a big ancient one that hits for 3 and 3, great. You know, it might be the difference between success and failure in a scenario. But broadly speaking, it just doesn't quite cut the mustard. What I'd love it to be able to do is, you know, I like the situation of, say, you let an acolyte hit you and then the acolyte kills itself and removes the doom. But yes, if you need to remove the doom on the acolyte, you don't want to gamble.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need to just get it done. Yeah. It has an upgraded version as well. The upgraded version reduces the cost and deals damage equal to its damage or horror of the enemy. So any enemy that just hits for, say, 2 horror would deal 2 damage to itself.
Right.
Gives you a bit more flexibility.
Right.
I like that as an upgrade. And the 2 cost is huge in terms of the difference.
That,
I run it.
Yeah, that feels like it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
I still think maybe like there's other ways of having, not achieving the same effect, but having this sort of same end result.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Probably better ways of doing that.
Yeah, I would think so too.
It's the old Aquaman problem, isn't it? Poor Aquaman. Like, once you're down to having to speak to fish, like, that's already, you know, you've already failed, really.
Yeah.
I'm going to get the Aquaman stands writing in, complaining.
Next, we have Shriveling Level 3. 3 cost, 3 XP asset, willpower and combat icons. It's spell traded. It uses 4 charges. Action, spend 1 charge, fight. This attack deals uses willpower instead of combat. You get plus 2 willpower and deal plus 1 damage for this attack. And if a skull, cultist, tablet, elder thing or autofell symbol is revealed during this attack, take 1 horror, takes up the arcane slot.
So the benefit of this over Shriveden level 0 is that it gives you plus 2 willpower.
Yes.
From my understanding.
Yeah, and a willpower icon if you're suddenly desperate.
Oh, right, yes. yes, fair enough.
Yeah. I adore this card.
Yeah.
Having the baked in plus 2, what we discover as the game goes on is that one of the powerful things about Mystics is that as their spells upgrade, they might not get new effects, but they might just have a baked in boost. And it leads into that willpower or nothing style, because you're boosting your willpower to use spells, and then the spells you're using are boosting your willpower as well, and you hit these really obscene heights of, say, 8, 9, 10 on the threshold on a test without really trying too hard, without like lots of commits, which is, yeah, really powerful style. It feels really good. Shriveling 3, really love it.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Like, even Jim, is there any Mystics with fewer than 4 willpower? Diana?
Yeah. One asterisk, yeah.
Yeah. So this is pumping you up to 6
Amina
plus.
As well.
Oh, yeah.
Poor Amina, yeah.
But this is pumping you up usually to 6. At least 6. 6 or 7. Just by itself, without any other willpower boosts. And because, as discussed, it was one of the core themes of Mystic is willpower replacement. You're probably boosting that stat yourself anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So this puts you in a really good place to attack pretty much any enemy in the game.
Yeah, it's really, really potent, basically.
Shall we move on?
Let's do it, yeah.
Brill. Ah, next we have a skill card. It is Defiance. This has 1 wild icon, and it has the innate trait. Before revealing chaos tokens for this test, choose one of the following symbols. Skull, cultist, tablet, or elder thing. Ignore the effects of this of the chosen symbol during this test, including its modifier. No.
Is it your second favourite type of card, that the flavour is a quote, even if the name is not a quote?
Absolutely, yes. This has not been tabooed, so it still only works on those symbols.
Yeah.
I think because it ignores the effect of the symbol, rather than just the modifier, it would become really strong, but potentially a mixed bag in a bless situation, because you'd be ignoring the bless.
Mm-hmm.
Would you put the bless back in the bag then?
I think you would, because it wouldn't roll, it wouldn't remove, it wouldn't give you plus 2.
Yeah.
Because that's the effect of the chosen symbol, right?
Yeah. Regardless, I think this is a good card. I like this card. Someone did the maths and said that it's about equivalent to an unexpected courage.
Mm-hmm.
The key thing is that you understand what's in the bag. I think, as we said earlier, right, so you've got to view these Mystic cards as what's my kind of conversion rate on tokens from failure to success. How many tokens does putting this into a test convert? So you could be in a situation where you're, say, 2 up on a test. Committing this takes any minus 3s, turns them into successes because you're adding an icon. Mm-hmm. And then it might also take out a couple of tokens that are at minus, like special tokens that are at minus 4 or worse, if you pick the right symbol.
Yeah. Say skulls are minus 5 at that point. It's late in the scenario.
Yeah. It's at that point, it's almost better than the extra icon, isn't it? Because you're taking more tokens. Like, if you're comparing it to Unexpected Courage, it could be better.
It's a curious one there, because it's giving you a plus 1, so you're at 3 up, but also making you 5 up if you pull skulls.
Yeah.
Like, cancelling the skulls, which is fascinating, because you don't then want to hit something in that minus 4 threshold, because you'd fail, but the number of tokens you're removing might be better than if you just tried to boost to 5 up.
That's right.
Then have tried to boost to 4 up, sorry.
Yeah.
I see a similar thing actually with Unrelenting and choosing which tokens to seal.
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
Well, because I was going to say the other thing is, I mean, Unrelenting is an incredible card. So any positive comparison to Unrelenting is a good one. The other thing this does is, it's maybe a slightly more edge case, but you might be in a campaign or a scenario where a particular special token has a negative effect that you either just want to avoid, or you know you're in a position where you're likely to fail the test. You don't want that to happen. So I'm thinking, you know, poison. Is it the elder thing in that early? Will poison you?
Yeah.
And if you know you're...
Or if you're poisoned, you auto-fail, I think, in some TFA scenarios.
Yeah, but I think you probably want to avoid being poisoned in the first place.
Yes,
I'm sure one of the tokens will poison you.
Just locking that down.
Exactly. And then I remember we had a really difficult time towards the end of Scarlet Keys in one of the scenarios, where a particular symbol was like moving enemies and getting us attacked and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You might be
it
like,
was a mean modifier as well.
It was, yeah. So you could be like, well, I don't want to get attacked, whether I pass this test or not. Let's just take that out of the equation altogether.
Really good example. Tough modifier, mean effect, multiple versions of that token, and boosting your skill high enough to ignore that token is hard work. Because you'd maybe be looking for a +3 boost every test, but you can put Defiance in for a +1, but also just remove those tokens. So if you draw those tokens, you've given yourself a +3, and if you don't draw those tokens, fine. It's one of the cards I find where I often put it in a starting deck and then take it out, because there are many occasions with Defiance where you commit it and it doesn't do anything. I put that in quote marks. It feels like it doesn't do anything, because it feels like it only does something if you hit the thing you named. So it's that slight lottery of, I'm going to name a thing and then draw a token. Ha ha, I got it right. I feel great. And the times when you don't do that, you don't notice that, like, well, it still gave me a +1 and I'm actually paying for the ability to avoid a difficult token rather than whether or not that happens.
Yeah.
The leveled up version is really good as well. Just throwing that out there.
Yes.
If you like Defiance, you'll love Defiance too.
Other people also purchased. Should we move on to the next card?
Yeah, next we have Blood Pact. This is a null-costed 3xp asset. It's spell and pact traded. It's null-costed because it's permanent. Free trigger, add one doom to Blood Pact. You get +3 willpower for this skill test. Limit once per test. Free trigger, add one doom to Blood Pact. You get +3 combat for this skill test. Limit once per test.
So this is, I said earlier, we had some doom manipulation coming in this cycle, and this is our first, I think our first one of those. None of the other ones we've looked at so far are doom. And we will see another one
very soon.
Yeah. And then some other doom stuff later on. Permanent, obviously very strong. One of the cards that contributed to the coining of the phrase witching hour.
Yeah, the witching hour, and you suddenly go wild on your Blood Pact.
Yeah, that's right. You can, you know, three doom on there from your three different tests.
It's funny you say it's a permanent card, so it's good, because it's also a doom card, and doom and permanent are not good bedfellows, are they? There's a level 0 Blood Pact now that I've played around with in Dexter because of the ease with which you can remove it. Because it's an asset that you can obviously use Dexter's ability on and shed it when you need to. And, of course, with this, you need to have ways of clearing the doom, or you're limited to just using it in the witching hour, which is, kind of fascinating and tricksy. I think the other thing where this falls down for me is the combat boost.
Yeah.
Where probably... Well, just the issue is that probably I'm using my willpower to fight in Mystic.
Yes.
And I don't have too many places. There aren't many weapons in Mystic that you might want the boost for. You're probably not punching things. In someone like, say, Agnes with the fire axe, or in fact, Jim with a machete, sure, you might want to use the combat boost. But it's one of the challenges of creating skill boosters in Mystic, is that they want to use one stat so much that kind of the other stat doesn't matter in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's not really a criticism of the card, though. Like, because you use the willpower boost more often, it doesn't make the card. Just ignore that if you don't like it, Frank.
I guess what I'm getting at is the applicability of the card. That's the point of reviewing cards, yeah. The utility of this card goes down because if you're going to use it just for those moments when, okay, I'm going to, it's Witching Hour, I want to pile Doom on stuff. Maybe you're going to run out of Shriveling Charges and you pile one on and punch something instead. Sure, that's fine. I guess what I'm thinking is, say it's Witching Hour and there are no enemies around. You could be using the willpower to boost your Rite of Seeking. You run into the risk of pulling a token and that's your turn ended with just 1+3. If the other boost was Intellect, which I understand it's not, at least you could be getting some clues. And if it was Agility, you could at least evade enemies in a way that you wouldn't. But for combat, I don't know. The combat just doesn't sell me as much.
I don't know. I think that's an odd criticism of the card.
I mean, it's more of an experience-based criticism.
Right.
Okay. Like, I guess what I'm saying is I've played the card, I like the willpower boost, and the second boost, I think, oh, okay.
I never use. I think I just view it as a bonus. Like, every so often it would be useful.
Yeah.
I guess the situation might be if you have a Shriveling and you're fighting a 3-health enemy or a 5-health enemy, you can save a Shriveling charge.
Yes. Yeah. Good point. I suppose what I mean is...
So eat your words, Frank.
Compare this with the other... This isn't a talent, but the other talents that came out in Blood on the Altar.
Yes.
Streetwise, you might want to use the Intellect boost, you might want to use the Agility boost. Higher Ed, you definitely want to use the Intellect boost. People have used the Willpower boost because it gives you Treachery protection.
Mm-hmm.
Scrapper, you might want to use the Combat boost because you're fighting. You might want to use the Agility boost either for Willpower protection or for evading an enemy. And then you come to Blood Pact, the Willpower boost, yeah, it will help you with Treacheries, it will help you being your spells. You're less likely to need the Combat boost, is what I'm saying, than compared with those.
Yeah,
which is part of the reason why it's less popular, I would imagine. It's not got two stats that's boosting that you can use a lot. It's got one.
Yeah, but I think it fits into a picture of Mystic, which is based around... Like, you all look at, this say, basket. Like, Grounded, whereas mm-hmm. all those other composers have two stats, Grounded just has one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a flexible boost in terms of what stat it boosts, although it's probably willpower.
I'd say that Grounded is even... like a natural evolution of a card like Blood Pact, where when you're trying to pick what other stat to boost on Blood Pact, there aren't really any good options because it's willpower that people want. And I would even say that probably people would, if we removed the second ability, people would evaluate the card in the same way on Blood Pact.
Yeah, I guess that's my confusion at what you were saying was because that's the case. Like, I just view it as a little bonus. It's kind of a symmetry, really. They all give two stats. So Blood Pact gives boosted two stats, even if your whole thing about Mystic is that they use one stat more than
one. Yeah.
Plus, of course, I mean, we're glad it's got this because with the Mina, sometimes you do want the stat, the actual stat booster, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It changes if you can 4D run chess. Anyone who actually can use the combat. And same in Dexter as well. Dexter's got 3 combat. Akachi's got 3 combat. You might be running, you know, there's, what's it called? The Enchanted Blade, the Mystic Enchanted Blade. Cool. Should we move on?
Okay, Brill, we've got a 4-cost asset. It is Alisa Graham, Speaker to the Dead. She has an intellect icon and the ally and sorcerer traits. You get +1 intellect. Free trigger, exhaust Alisa Graham. Look at the top card of either the encounter deck or any player deck. You may then add 1 Doom to Alisa Graham to place the looked at card on the bottom of its deck. She uses the ally slot and she has 1 health and 3 sanity.
What I'm wondering about is why were people not absolutely wild about this card when it came out? Because it's such a good card.
Did you use it much when it came out?
No.
Why not? Well, ask yourself that question, Frank.
I know, yeah, exactly. And the only thing I can think of is I played predominantly solo. Obviously, Arcane Initiate is a thing, fetches you spells. Maybe even at that point, I was still trying to do willpower tricks to get clues. Whereas the power of Alisa is in a solo Mystic of 3 or higher intellect. This takes you up to a 4, which is pretty decent. And it gives you all of this certainty about what card you're drawing next from the encounter deck. You sometimes can use the ability to get rid of that card, but most of the time it just helps you with positioning, helps you with planning ahead, helps you know, do I need to draw more cards this turn because I've got something coming up that I really want to commit cards to. It's such a powerful card. She's such a good ally. So, yeah, the only thing I can think of is that maybe people didn't prioritize the intellect boost at this point in Mystic because of willpower, as we've already said.
Yeah, potentially. There was always one you could look at in Daisy at this point, right?
Yeah, yeah. Solo Daisy with Alyssa Graham. But you're competing with Dr. Milan Christopher.
So. Well, of course, yes, who was still absolutely bananas at this point.
Yeah, yeah. What do you make of Alyssa Graham? I don't know if we've ever talked about the card.
Niche, I think. I've used her a little bit. I've used her when her ability combos with...
Gloria.
Yeah.
Trigger Gloria every single turn, yeah.
Yeah. Well, exactly, yeah. And potentially Amina, because you can ready her. She seems good in those situations. But no, she doesn't really strike me as like a... She's not one of the power nine.
I think her power just grows so much in solo.
I think that's it. I think one card when you've got three or four players, mm-hmm. doesn't feel like it makes that much of a difference. And maybe I'm wrong in that as well. But I think my tendency to play more multiplayer games is the reason that I haven't really looked at this too much.
Yeah, yeah. If you're playing Mystic in multiplayer, you're probably... there could be weird builds out there, but you're probably using spell assets to do things, so you're probably boosting your willpower. Even if you're doing Rite of Seeking or other clue spells, it's still willpower. So the idea that you would maybe just need to get one clue as a multiplayer Mystic and use your intellect to do so is not likely. Whereas in a solo Mystic, yeah, absolutely, you might want to like, oh, this is a one or two shroud location, it only has one clue, I'll just investigate normally and I'll save my Rite of Seeking charges for the 2i locations where I really want to bust them. That argument and that nuance, I think, wasn't that... I could be wrong, but I don't remember it being that prevalent. It's fascinating to me, because now solo Mystic, I'd be looking for a reason not to run Alyssa, as in I'd have to find a good reason. And I played through on Think on Your Feet. I played through Return to Dunwich with Diana Stanley with Alyssa as the ally.
Yeah.
Because then planning ahead your cancels, knowing what's coming in terms of cancellation. Diana's at 4 intellect, so you can clue relatively easily at that point. It's great. Okay. Shall I move us on?
Yeah, let's move on. I've just noticed that there's a little bit of green paint on my next card.
Oh.
It's all right. It off.
The next card is Rite of Seeking, level 4. This is a 5 cost asset, 4 XP, double intellect icons. It's spell traited. It uses 3 charges. Action, spend 1 charge, investigate. Investigate using willpower instead of intellect. You get +2 willpower for this test. If successful, you discover 2 additional clues at this location. And then if a skull, cultist, tablet, elder thing, or autofell symbol is revealed during this test, after this test resolves, lose all remaining actions and immediately end your turn. Takes up the arcane slot.
This is good card, I think.
In 3 player.
Yeah. Expensive, especially in 3 player, yeah.
Especially in 3 player.
I would say that I had a friend who a little while ago ran a Mateo combo deck. With Versatile and Scavenging and the Codex to always draw an Elder Thing. The Elder Sign during the test on Rite of Seeking.
Yeah.
And that's good. Just 3 clues a turn. Guaranteeing 3 clues a turn is good, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. This card is such a fascinating conundrum because it's expensive, it's high XP... And yet it's really explosive when it does what it does. It gives you the boost. It gives you lots of extra clues.
Yes.
And the penalty is exactly the same as the level 0 version. So, it's really good.
Can you think of many other single cards that give you 3 clues for 1 action?
Very few, right?
Yeah.
Have you got one in mind?
Does Pilfer do that?
Oh, yeah, of course. The Pilfers both do that, yeah.
Deduction,
they're expensive as well.
Deduction level 2.
Yeah. Archaic Glyphs, the upgraded version where you can smash a test and get a gajillion clues. Yeah.
Technically, yeah, research notes, I guess, you could put into that bracket.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you look at deduction, Pilfer costs... How much does Pilfer cost?
4.
For 1?
It's a one and done.
Yeah. There is
and
a
this
pill
is five for nine, yeah.
Yeah. Like, even if this gave you, like, three clues just for the one action, it's not like, that wouldn't be an unheard of trade-off.
Yeah, five resources, two actions, one to play it, one to use it.
Yeah.
For plus two.
And like,
three
you
clues.
Know, Intel report, four for two clues, one action.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, good point.
I think it's very potent and concentrated clear acceleration. Five is a lot.
Yeah.
In a faction, yeah. With, you know, compared it to both Pilfer and Intel Report there. They're both in Rogue, who can much more easily absorb the resource cost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
However, you do have Carcosa, I think, on Cage the Soul arrived.
Yes, that makes things a bit more manageable.
Nice for dropping this down.
And in fact, what you want in Mystic, I'm going to assume inside the designer's heads here, you don't want loads of resource cards in Mystic.
Mm-hmm.
You want reasons to recharge your spells, because that's a feature of the class as well, that they can add more charges to things. If you just make them a really rich class, then you just play multiple versions of your spells. So, yeah, makes sense that you can't afford it. The cost, I'd say, is steep. It's one of the things that's challenging about this card, for sure. I'd also say in two or four player, I don't think I've ever run this solo, first of all, but in two or four player, it can also leave you in that slightly awkward hole of it doesn't actually give you any, it doesn't actually speed up what you're doing, because you get three clues with one Roach of Seeking, and then there's still a clue left if it's a two-eye or a one-eye in four-player location, and you're left then like, oh, okay, there's still a clue to get. And maybe someone else is getting it, or whatever it is, but it falls into that slight trap that unless it's a six-clue location and you're going to use it twice, it's not actually necessarily sped you up. But multiplayer has loads of ways of soothing that.
Yes.
Other sleeper thing I really like is we've seen Shriveling upgrades to level 3 and Rite of Seeking upgrades to level 4, and the idea that they're not just following a set pattern I really liked at the time. I remember it being curious and weird. And in Return to Dunwich, we get Rite of Seeking 2, which is the halfway house, and it just gives you the baked in plus 2 boost to the level 0. And that's all. Yeah, there's scope, I suppose, to play with XP values and what you do or don't get out of it. Move us on?
Yeah, let's do it. Flip forwards. Okay, next we have a zero-cost event, Moonlight Ritual. This has an intellect and an agility icon. It has the spell and insight traits, and it says, remove all doom from one card you control. This was like the beginning of a... It's interesting, Moonlight Ritual. It's, I think when we saw it, we knew it was a foundational card for an archetype that was gonna land one day.
Yeah.
And I think everyone sort of agreed at the point it came out, there wasn't that much point in taking it.
Yeah.
Because the only card it was really going to work on was Blood Pact and potentially Elisa Graham.
Yeah, potentially Arcane Initiate.
But for those cards, typically there was better ways of dealing with them than putting this card in your deck.
Yeah.
I think if it had better icons or it did something like draw a card, I think it would be a lot more appealing in that kind of role. And I think even now, would you maybe take this in Amina? But I don't think it's like the clutch card that it could be in Amina either. Like, I think you'd rather take... Well, you just take Sinita, which has this effect built into it, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah. Spend an action, remove all doom. What it allows, what Moonlight Ritual allows, exactly as you say, is to break out of the Witching Hour with doom. So with your Blood Pact, you can have Blood Pact down from the beginning of the game and be using Blood Pact steadily. And as long as you keep track of that doom, then you use Moonlight Ritual and on you go again. There's an ally that comes up later, David Renfield, where you might also want to Moonlight Ritual David Renfield, because David Renfield is so powerful that you don't want to necessarily just put a horror on David Renfield and kill him. But yeah, broadly speaking, the trading a card and an action to remove all doom, if that's only for a single doom, it's not, doesn't cut the mustard. I think I've used cut the mustard a couple of times in this episode. Clearly I'm hungry when we record. Yeah, it doesn't quite sell it for me. There's like some weird stuff you can do. Yeah, there's some weird stuff you can do with De Vermis Mysteries and playing out of your discard pile, which I've seen, which is lovely, but it's so niche. Yeah, I don't have much to say about it. I think you were spot on when you said it's this foundational card for an archetype. Yeah. If you're going to do loads of Doom shenanigans, great, include it. If not, it doesn't see play. The level 2 version, incidentally, which came out in Scarlet Keys, is fast.
Yeah.
And reads, remove all Doom from a non-elite card at your location. So you can remove Doom from other people's cards, from cultists if they're non-elite.
Yeah.
From say Doom that's been placed on a location, and or from any of the stuff you do. So that's really cool. We'll shut down various. There's in Shattered Eons, there's Doom that gets added to one of the locations. You can just like move in, snipe that, on you go. Next we have Fearless level 2. It has 2 willpower icons now. It's innate and developed. If this skill test is successful, heal 1 horror, 2 horror instead if it succeeds by 2 or more. Only by standing firm against the darkness can we live to see the light of another day. It's a hooded man with hooded person with a lantern and a rifle shining a light into a very tentacled thing.
Yeah, this is a kind of cycle of double icon faction skill cards that we got out of the core set.
Mm-hmm.
I do think I like Fearless. Like, I think it's a sign that these cards do something good when you commit them to get the ability, the enhanced ability on the card.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because we've discussed before, deduction level 2, if you want to get 3 clues, it kind of doesn't give you a stat boost.
Yeah.
Fearless is sort of in the same bracket. You really want that horror heal. I mean, remember at this point that half of all Mystic decks, half plus, are Agnes, who uses her sanity as a resource.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't think, like, Daisy's taking it, who had 9 sanity. You know, Jim might be taking it for the stat boost, but Jim does have horror healing built in.
Mm-hmm.
Agnes, mm-hmm. Yeah, she was using up her horror, trying to use up her horror for the course of the game. And this felt like a really good, concentrated horror heal. Especially when you've also got clarity of mind in this cycle, which does a third more than this, but you have to pay and then spend 3 actions to do it.
yeah. In fact, you know, that in itself, if we talk in the future again about clarity of mind, maybe we will, maybe we won't, the good comparison point is with something like Fearless in Faction. And exactly as you say, it's so much more powerful. If you're Agnes, you're using Shriveling 3, so you're already fighting at a 7. Fearless takes you up to 9. You've probably got a willpower boost, so you're a 10. And if you think of yourself as really at testing at 8, because you want to succeed by 2, that's doable. It's eminently doable if your stat is a 10 to succeed by 2. So, yeah, it's a strong enough card.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that I was actually asking patrons about this earlier in the week.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's fascinating about it is it's an ability that at the moment mystics care about because of Agnes. But like you say, there aren't necessarily other mystics who are particularly keen on this. And mystics, generally speaking, have higher sanity than they do health, although that's not always the case. So it's a curious ability to have. You know, Vicious Blow does damage in the faction that wants to fight. Deduction gets clues in the faction that wants to get clues. Fearless heals horror in a faction that doesn't necessarily need to hear horror or not.
Yeah.
Although we'd add to that Shriveling, Ward of Protection, there is lots of like self-horror abilities for getting knowledge. So maybe there's a bit more of a niche of, I guess thematically what it is mystics are staring into the mythos and it is losing their sanity as a result, but they also have abilities that then shore up their sanity. What's next?
We've got the Jewel of Areola. Jewel of...
Why? Yeah.
Aureolus? The Gift of the Homunculi. Homunculi, I know what an homunculus is, but it just makes me think of Jeremy's band in Peep Shows. Was at one point called Danny Dyer's Chocolate Homunculus. And someone used that as a... Actually, I think technically it wasn't Jeremy's band, it was Superhand's band. When I used to go to a pub quiz, someone used that as their pub quiz team name.
Amazing.
Danny Dyer, Chocolate Homunculus. Anyway, yes, it is a 3-cost asset, 3 XP single wild icon. It has the item and relic traits. Free trigger. After a skull, cultist, tablet, elder thing, or autofail symbol is revealed during a skill test at your location, exhaust Jewel of Areolus, draw one card, or gain 2 resources. And that uses an accessory slot. What do you reckon to this card, Frank?
I love this card. I don't know if it's any good. Review over. Yeah, I'm really fond of it. I think it's a really cool ability. It has been tabooed to just be a symbol. And the nice thing about it is anyone can pull that symbol and you can trigger it. But yeah, it can sit there not doing anything as well, unfortunately.
Man, you know what? Like, my experience is the opposite. I think when I've been playing, because I'm playing with more players, I think it triggers almost every round. If it triggered every round, do you think it's a good card?
Yes.
There you go.
Very good. Very good.
I think that's the line, isn't it? And I think we didn't talk about Jim's trumpet, but that has a similar kind of feel to it, because you're working it scales differently because you're working with between actions spent between refresh windows. And in 4-player, you just got more actions, more tests taken between those windows. So it totally fires more often. Yeah. I think the difficulty is it's an econ card in the accessory slot, which is difficult.
Yeah.
But there are ways to expand that slot. It's a relic, so there's ways of getting relics into play. There are opportunities to drop this down regardless without it clogging up that slot.
As we've seen, the arcane and accessory slots bleed together in Mystic. There are ways of, you know, treating one as the other and so on and so forth. There's more scope for this to be snuck down there, yeah. And the idea of a kind of bangle-wearing Mystic who has various spells but also various different charms and relics on hand is, yeah, really appealing to me. It's a really nice style. It, you know, funny actually, rewind a little bit. Even just 3 cards ago, I was talking about how econ is one of the things that mystics find hard, and then we've got a card like this that's drawing cards or gaining resources. It's your choice, potentially turn after turn after turn. It's a really potent card. Probably doesn't get played as much as it should. It's a shame that there's the Crystal Pendulum now at level 0 in the slot, because you can get steady draw off the Crystal Pendulum if you're that kind of a mystic.
Yeah, if
maybe
you don't
sort of
mind
shades out this
doing lots of maths every single turn.
Is that why we never finished our Trish and Jackie curse through TFA?
Oh my god,
too much like work.
Yeah. The more cards we added, the slower it got.
Next, we have Shriveling level 5.
Here we go.
Willpower and double combat icons. Spell traded, uses 4 charges. Doesn't have a full stop after that. Major typo. Action, spend 1 charge, fight. This attack uses willpower instead of combat. You get +3 willpower and deal +2 damage for this attack. And then if a skull, cultist, elder thing, tablet, or autofill symbol is revealed during this attack, take 2 horror.
I think
takes up the arcane slot.
What we forgot to mention about Jewel of Areolus is that has been tabooed, I believe.
Oh yeah, I said that.
Did you? Okay, sorry.
A symbol. Yeah, good point.
Head down.
Studying the little homunculus.
Yeah, the wee guy. Just a weird little guy.
Who are the homunculi?
In lore?
In Arkham, yeah. Are we gonna ever meet the homunculi?
Gift of the homunculi.
As in they've given it to you?
It doesn't look like it because there is a homunculus in the jewel.
Mm.
You've been given the gift of... It's like the gift of speech or the gift of sight. It's the gift of the homunculi. Gift of Danny Dyer's chocolate homunculus.
Lovely. Anyway, sorry. Shriveling.
Yeah. Man, this is a... It's you get quite a bit for your extra 2 XP, don't you? It's especially nice if you're going down the rabbit hole. Same applies to Rite of Seeking, because you can work your way up to Shriveling level 5, spending a total of 4 XP. No. 6 XP. Across 2 copies.
you basically get level 5 for free as long as you go up to the level 3.
Yeah, but you pretty split nice. Out, you spread out your cost.
Yeah.
See, there's a lot for your XP, but like, I think dealing plus 2 damage is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
The
3 costs 12 damage, yeah.
Yeah, the additional plus 1 willpower is sort of neither here nor there, I would say, at the point where you're plus 2. But it is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Mm-hmm. You know, I'll take it. But the 2 horror when you attack, like, that's potentially 8 horror of this. Which is, that's a lot of horror. Hot take, Frank.
It is a lot of horror, Peter, yes.
It's the card where I remember being hit by the negative effect of drawing the special symbol most.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
It is a symbol magnet.
It is,
You play Shriveling 0 or 3 and you're like, yeah, I've taken a couple of horror off this, but it's not a problem. And then you upgrade to level 5. You're like, I think I can handle this. Bam, skull first attack. Bam, tablet second attack. Yeah, suddenly you're on half sanity.
Exactly, half your pool's gone.
And you're like, maybe now I do need Blood Pact to just punch the enemy for his last health.
Yeah,
whatever this 7 health enemy is fighting.
Where's my fearless?
Yeah. It's a very threatening effect, sort of negative effect. And again, comparison with Rite of Seeking 4, where it doesn't get any worse. The card gets more expensive, but the punishment doesn't get any worse for pulling the symbol, whereas for Shriveling 5, the punishment does get worse.
Yes.
I would go so far as to say I think quite a lot of people have been caught out by the shift from 1 to 2 horror as well, in that, it can be really scary. And, of course, the times when you want to use Shriveling 5 are for that big boss fight, and maybe you're going to be being hit by a boss, or there's a fear of that. And you can easily be looking at taking, say, 5 or 6 horror in a turn if you've pulled a couple of bad pulls with the Shriveling and then the enemy's still around. It's like, oh my goodness. I'd say this is not a card that I always see people upgrade into. And my suggestion would be, if you are going to upgrade into Shriveling 5, to have a plan for mitigating the horror.
Mm.
Rather than just say, oh, well, I hope I'll get fearless and that'll be enough.
Yeah, it's maybe absolutely.
Being more deliberate with what you're doing about it.
Get Pete Sylvester down.
Exactly. Maybe you've got upgraded Pete Sylvester. Maybe you're even doing that nice thing that you described with Song of the Dead, of having a bit of a combo of spells. And this is where I really like the idea of like a widened arcane sweet mystic, that you might have your Shriveling 5 down, your Song of the Dead down, maybe one other combat spell if you've got the slots for it. And you're picking and choosing based on the target, rather than just at lower levels, it's just, I'll use Shriveling on everything. Anything else we need to say about Shriveling 5?
I don't think so. We talked a lot about Shriveling just in general, so should we move on to our last card?
I just want to shout out the Shriveling art. It's one of the pieces of art I think I was most excited about before the game even came out.
You've mentioned this before, I'm sure. Yeah.
I really like it. It's really evocative for like a spell doing a thing. I think because it's showing you the effect of the spell rather than an investigator like shooting a bolt of fire out of their hand.
I think you've definitely talked about this before. But
have I? Okay.
No, I'd like it though. I think it would be easy to draw a spell like that. Like just we're shooting some mystic rays at an enemy and it's dying. But this is like it's not abstract, but it's more, what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. Ephemeral, mundane. Yeah. Also, fun fact for you, the person is wearing a brown suit.
Yes.
And as we know, there is only one brown suited character in all of the Arkham files, which is Schizo Tool.
Ah.
So every time you use Shriveling, you're saying that you want to kill Skids at all.
As well, doesn't he? Skids.
Yeah.
Okay, should we move on to our last spell?
Yes, let's do it.
We have Ward of Protection. This is a 1-cost 5 XP event with a willpower and a wild icon. Has the spell and spirit traits. Fast, play when you draw a non-weakness encounter card. Cancel all of that card's effects and discard it. Then take 1 horror. The ultimate encounter card protection, really, isn't it?
And you really need that willpower icon for that plus 2 for all of your spells.
That's right.
Yes, it is the ultimate, because it doesn't care about treacheries. It just says a non-weakness encounter card.
Mm-hmm.
So treacheries, enemies.
Enemies, yes. Enemy cancellation is much more rare than encounter card cancellation, yeah. I would say.
Elite enemy.
Yep.
Cancel it.
Surge, cancel surge. Often surge appears out with the revelation effect of a card.
Yep.
So cancelling that, super nice. It's just a real one-stop shop for not having an encounter card.
Mm, the Mega Nope card. Mm. Yeah. I feel like with this card, because
do
many
you
people
take
like
it, is the question.
Yeah, well, many people like Water Protection Zero, which is fast. Play when you draw a non-weakness treachery card, cancel that card's revelation effect, then take a horror. And this still is aimed at you. It's still when you draw a non-weakness encounter card, but you can cancel enemies as well. It's weird. I like. It seems so powerful, and then yet I didn't see too many people running it or using it. I wonder if maybe it's because there's also Water Protection 2, which allows you to cancel a card for an investigator at any location. So you can cancel someone else drawing their ancient evils, whereas Water Protection 5 doesn't let you cancel for other people, which seems like an oversight to me. I feel like for 5 XP, I would like this to cancel for everyone. The thing I have done with this card, though, to answer your question properly, is slot this under Diana Esperance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Very nice.
And then not draw an encounter card for 3 turns in a row. Take 3 horror for it.
Yeah.
And that in solo, when I pulled that off, I just felt so amazing. It's such a powerful... I think I did it in Depths of Yoth. And it's so good to just have 3 turns of essentially no mythos. Just be cancel that next thing. Okay, cancel that next thing. And of course... You can see the card before you decide.
Absolutely,
to cancel
yeah,
as well.
Yeah. So it doesn't. So it's yeah. not. Yeah, yeah.
You're not committing to cancelling multiple turns.
Yeah.
So yeah, you hold this. Maybe it's also that Water Protection gets used mostly for ancient evils, or often for ancient evils.
For some kind of doom effect. Yeah.
So putting 5 XP into a card that you're still going to use probably to stop a doom effect. Maybe that's why people don't go there. I don't know. How about you? Have you used it? What's your experience with it?
I can't remember using it that much, really. It's so interesting to me. Big drop of XP. I don't deny it's a very strong effect. And being able to discard, what are they called? The dancers?
Yeah.
Mindless dancers. Mindless dancers. Yeah. I thought it was mindless dancer. No VPs on that card.
Yeah.
So no reason to kill them, but just such a pain to deal with.
6, 5, 5 health.
Just gone, bye-bye. Even like stuff like spheres and things like that, which are just a real drain on your turns, getting rid of them.
Swarming enemies as well.
Yeah. Just a big nope button.
Yeah, super nice. And we've not said throughout this episode, but of course, if you have ways of drawing spells...
Yes. Yeah.
Seen by it, like Arcane Initiate. Absolutely, other possible options as well. Yeah, you'd have this in hand when you need it and then use it. It feels like what you want to get out of this is your doom cancelling, but then also have the option to cancel an enemy. And I suppose in solo, that's great. But in multiplayer, you might have enemy solutions anyway in your team. So that need to cancel an enemy, unless it's something really nasty like a Mindless Dancer, is less. Because you draw what looks like a scary enemy and the fight is already tooled up and they go, no, that's fine, I'll just kill that. If you're going down the rabbit hole...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Like
so it's -1 if you upgrade, right? So you'd spend 2 XP to upgrade 0 to 2.
Yeah.
As in 2 XP across 2 copies. And then you would be spending... Yeah, exactly.
2 each.
So it works out as the same as the shriveling, right? So 6 XP for 2 5 XP cards in your hand. In your deck, rather.
Yeah, presuming you're playing, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 scenarios so that you can use down the rabbit hole enough times.
It's down the rabbit hole.
It's 2 per...
Two per, yeah, that's right.
You have to make sure you upgrade them first as well.
Yes, the order matters, yeah.
Well, it does, because I'm playing a Jenny deck, which has down the rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
And it has the Green Man Medallion.
Mm-hmm.
And Green Man Medallion is the first... I think it's the first card you buy or spend experience on or something like that.
Okay. Ooh. Yeah.
So you have to make sure you don't, your first card isn't an upgrade.
Yeah.
And it costs a lot of XP to use Green Lantern Medallion. And then you have to upgrade your cards to get the benefit of down the rabbit hole.
You've just made the sort of upgrading step of the game super complicated.
I have to keep like a table in the notes section of my the deck building app. It's got a really long, like, after every game, this is exactly what I did, and this is the exact cost of everything.
Yeah. And then you're not actually using that deck building app probably to actually track the actual experience, because it would break it. Yeah.
Yes.
Right, well, here ends our Mystic cards of the Dunwich Legacy.
Yes.
Ahead of this episode, Peter, you said there was a really good selection here. How are you feeling now that we've gone through them and...
Good. I think, like, with a couple of exceptions, these cards all stand up. I think Hypnotic Gaze is probably a little bit of a miss. Clarity of Mind, we're not big fans of. But I think apart from that, I don't think there's any real, like, stinkers.
Yeah. I guess Bind Monster is in the lower bracket there.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, I don't think it's terrible. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would take it, but... I don't think it's awful. And I think there's probably some combo use for that as well if you're playing alongside some kind of Trish deck or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, fine. If you like it, go ham. But I think aside from that, viewed in isolation, the thing is that these cards maybe didn't have the collective impact when they came out.
Mm.
But looking back from a position of nine, how many cycles have we got? Nine cycles. There is nine cycles, right?
Core, Dunwich, Carcosa, Forgotten Age, Circle Undone, Dream Eaters, Innsmouth, Edge of the Earth, Scarlet Keys. Nine if you count the core set.
Oh, sorry. I was looking at my folders and I thought I hadn't put Scarlet Keys on, but I have. Yeah.
Eight expansions.
Yeah. So, like, from the point of view of looking back, I think, like, the cards in the set look good, look fine.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah, it's probably more coherent than I remember it being. A couple of clue spells, a couple of combat spells, well, more than a couple of combat spells, some cancellation, some doom, bit of horror healing, an ally, an accessory slot. Like, you could almost build a deck just out of these cards.
Yeah.
And it would be pretty reasonable. Nice spread across different slots as well. Arcane slot is obviously under a bit more pressure than all of the others. But yeah, a nice selection, I think. And I feel like a couple of cards that I would love to revisit, like Jewel of Aureolus, I think it's such a lovely card. Fond Memories of Water Protection 5, although I've not run it a lot. Like, a good mixture, I think.
What's your fave? What's your pick of the set?
I'm going to go Jewel of Aureolus.
Nice.
Every time I look at it, I'm like, ooh, that's powerful. And then I'm disappointed. So maybe this time when I play it, I'll be less disappointed. How about you? What's your pick?
It's tempting to go for Ritual Candles, but I think Defiance captures a lot of things I like about playing card games.
Mm.
I like the choice it gives you, and I like the maths that you have to do related to it. So
yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's a really nice combination of name and flavour text and art as well. I think it's really good.
And Kosi Mabati.
Yes, of course, we know who he is now.
Yeah. And I suppose shout out as well to Shriveling 3, probably one of my most played ever cards. So it's worth acknowledging.
Brill. Okay, well, should we call it there?
So yeah, here ends our second looks at the return to Dunwich Legacy cards, and this one was obviously the Mystic cards. We'd love to hear what you think about it as well, so why not get in touch if you have thoughts, feelings, strong opinions about any of these cards. We're Drawn to the Flame podcast at gmail.com. We're Drawn to the Flame on Facebook, Twitter, Design by Humans, and Patreon. Thank you to all our patrons, and if you become a patron, you can come and join us on our wonderful, friendly Discord. So do say hello. Peter, how can people get in touch with you?
I am Unitled everywhere. That's UNITLED. I'm on, for now, I say it's every time, Twitter's taken yet another turn for the worst. I am still on Twitter, but who knows how long that will last. And then Reddit and Steam, and I'm on Instagram as the.unitold. So, yeah, please say hello. How about you, Frank?
I'm also on Twitter for however long that lasts. FB EPH_BEE. And then I'm around the place as Zooey Glass and Zozo. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.